I like that. Dan just said, "Let's roll it." That was a very professional, cool podcast thing to say.
I've literally never said that before
Now, I
ever.
know. That's why I'm so blown away. It's like, all right, let's.
He has an audience.
Yeah, I got to perform a little bit more.
All right, there's some tagline. This is the longest tagline of the show, so let's roll it indeed. They know him and they shiver. The big names of Broadway, Hollywood, and Capitol Hill. They know JJ, the world-famed columnist whose gossip is gospel to 60 million readers. They know the venom. Yes, it's still going. They know the venom that flickers in those eyes behind the glasses. And they fawn like Sid Falco, the kid who wanted, quote unquote, in so much. He'd sell out his own girl to stand up there with JJ, sucking in the sweet smell of success. This is JJ's story, but not the way he would have liked it told.
That's a synopsis. That's it. I don't think that's a tagline.
Yeah.
That must have been quite the big poster. All right. It's normal from here, though. Lie for it. Cheat for it. Drink to it. The sweet smell of success.
It's okay.
Yeah.
You guys love that first one. See, we came in too hot. How can you top that paragraph?
Yeah,
it's like longer than the movie.
Yeah.
And it's a long movie. Beware these gentlemen of the press.
All right.
Good
That's
morning.
It?
Yeah. They were running out of stuff after that first one. All right. This is the story of JJ. Wait, what's it like?
I was going to say, it's like that could have also worked for like Ace in the Hole.
Like,
so vague.
They're just taking its leftovers, I'm sure. The story of JJ, but not the way he wants it told. Well, that was kind of that other one. All right. The almighty JJ, the columnist with 60 million believers. His wrath is feared by the great and near great who worship the sweet smell of success. And finally, the motion picture that will never be forgiven or forgotten.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Much sure. Like time has been kind to the film.
That's true.
But
will we? Stay tuned.
You guys are making me so nervous.
Ahoy, hoy, Noiros, and Happy New Year. Never too late to wish such a kind wishing. I wish Happy New Year to you, Confetti Dan over there. He's got his hat still on. He's got the thing you blow. What do you call that, Dan? You're an expert at Party City.
I mean, it's Party Favor. I don't know. I don't. Woo! It probably has a name. I don't really know. It
could just be Party Favor.
Yeah.
Mayhaps our special guest of the show, returning fan favorite and show favorite, Film Noir Confidential.
Thank you so much, guys.
What do you call those things?
Party favors?
Woo! It is just that? Okay.
Well, like when you say party favor, I have a vision in my head. I know what you're talking about.
So like it's kind of like it includes like the hat, the blowy thing, and maybe a
it's
balloon.
Also you know the one that also you turn around and makes that like rickety.
Oh noise. Yeah, I wonder who invented that. Too. That feels like an accident. Like that, just like oh yeah, just sell that. It's broken, but screw it.
So I just looked it up because you know this
Amazing.
Is part
Amazing.
Of my job. So apparently the actual real term name for them is party horn.
Thank you. And it's part of the favor package.
Or I will say that there's a bunch of other names. So let me just roll through them real quick because I think you'll all enjoy them.
The new taglines right here.
Also known as a party blower, a party pipe.
Party pipe,
elephant,
I like that. Yeah.
Party blowout.
Wait, you said elephant?
Party elephant, yes.
Sure.
Party blowout, noisemaker.
Noisemaker, huh?
Party
that.
Whistle. There's a lot, so buckle in. Party honker. Ta-doo-da.
Nope.
Yeah, noise popper. Birthday kazoo.
Birthday kazoo is really good.
I like wizard.
Wizard's all right.
Blow tickler. Tongue kazoo.
Okay.
I promise you this is not like Urban Dictionary or something.
It feels like it.
What else is there? Party snake. Wow. There's too many names for that. But yes, party horn. I'm going to go with party horn.
Well, we're busting them out, whatever you want to call them, for today's episode. 105, kicking off the new year with something nice and smelly, the sweet smell of success. This was released on July 4th. What an Independence Day that must have been. in 1957. Distributors United Artists must have felt that way, along with the producers Hecht, Hill, and Lancaster Productions. I wonder if any one of those guys are going to be in the movie. Directed by Alexander Mackendrick. Screenplay by Clifford Odets and Ernest Lemen, based on the 1950 novelette. I believe it's the first novelette of the show. Tell me about Tomorrow! Exclamation point. From Ernest Lemen again, and that appeared in Cosmopolitan. And I want to give a special shout out to the real star of the show, cinematography, James Wong Howe. Beautiful looking movie.
The genius.
No matter how opinions may fall by the end of this sucker, what a good looking movie.
You guys are giving me such anxiety about how you feel about this place.
This was a film noir confidential pick.
No pressure, but it's one of my favorites.
Why is it your favorite, would you say?
Well, it's such, for me, like an immediate grab. The cinematography, James is my favorite cinematographer, even more so than John Alton. So I think it looks fantastic. The dialogue is so sharp and cutting. You know, I'm such a fan of New York City. I obviously lived there for a few years. I think both Lancaster and Tony Curtis give like a performance of a lifetime. Like they're both so good in it. It just, for me, just checks all the boxes. And the music, you got Chico Hamilton, yeah. Forget about it.
So those are all great selling points right there. We'll see where we take it from here.
We'll see if it sticks.
It could. It felt very sticky. But yes, we're in Manhattan and we're meeting Sidney Falco, our Tony Curtis, of course. He's a publicist, something I'm sure we're all familiar with in our industries. They're the slimiest of all.
Did you know I used to be a publicist?
Maybe I did.
I think he did.
In my other life, yeah.
I'm sure you were a real Sidney Falco back in your day.
Oh, yeah.
That's probably why you like this movie so much, is you can relate. You smelled that success yourself, didn't you?
Sydney's like the kind of publicist I wish I could be, because you have to have like a real, you have to be really like hell-bent for that level of success. Like it's a bit more ruthless than I ever could be.
I don't know about that. I think you're quite ruthless.
Thank you.
You found your way on the show yet once again and made a suggestion of a movie and everything. You're kicking in the door.
Watch out.
And I watched this on Hoopla, by the way. It's out there, but there's a Criterion Edition as well. That's a very nice package. We got 2 out of 3 holding that up. Digital Gentleman Joey here to say, I don't even think I said welcome to the show. So there's that. And welcome to me not holding anything. But we love Hoopla, so check them out. Get a library card. Maybe you have a New York City library card. So this guy, Falco, he's been trying to get his clients in the paper. He has a deal going on with a columnist of the New York Globe, J.J. Hunsecker, or Burt Lancaster. He'll be coming in a bit. He's has millions of readers, as we heard in the taglines. So it's very important to end up in this column if you can, but nothing's making it in. So J.J. is struggling as a result of that, and he's trying to keep everybody happy and keep himself afloat. He has a secretary as well, Sally, who is just kind of on the receiving end of his struggles and failures at the moment. So he needs to figure out how to get back on JJ's good side. And JJ himself has a problem going on with his sister, in fact, Susan, and a jazz player, because as we mentioned, this wonderful music all throughout. You get Steve Dallas, such a great name.
You get Adam 12 himself.
There you go.
Pete Malloy.
Any Adam 12 fans name out there? Yeah, I think.
I am. Yes, I grew up watching Adam 12. So I'm always glad to see him.
That might be one of the pro columns for you, Dan, on this one.
It is. No, I do really like him in this movie.
The performances are fantastic as well, is another compliment I would give.
I appreciate, because you don't always get to see a musician in film noir as, like, I wouldn't say he's a main character, but it's definitely like an important character to it. Because, yeah, I feel like you don't always get to see that. So I like the fact that he's like playing a guitar player, and that's a part of the plot. I do like that.
Not only by that, the 50s.
He's like, he's also like a good guy. Like you want to root for him. He's
sure.
not like
yeah,
a troublemaker, a druggie, or any sort of like negative connotation that you see a lot of times in movies.
He's probably like the only truly good and innocent character in the movie for the most part. Maybe the secretary Sally, but that's about it.
Right. And that's the irony of like what they end up, you know, trying to stick on him, you know. They try to paint him in that light.
You got to watch out for these people. Yeah, JJ fucking hates this relationship. He loves his sister and doesn't think that Steve Dallas is good enough for him. Mostly because he's a little mouthy, you know. He's disrespectful in JJ's eyes. You know, he's a god of the newspaper. And this guy's just mouthing off and running off with his sister. You can't have that.
He also doesn't seem very impressed by JJ, which I think bothers him.
Exactly.
Yeah.
JJ, our Burt Lancaster, he's got these wonderful glasses and he likes to eat. He's always eating in a lot of this movie, sitting at a restaurant table, just soaking it in like a mafia guy, but a journalist, you know? And he's
not
like,
too far off.
No, not at all. I mean, you know, some would say
fine line.
Some would smell such a thing. So JJ's like, JJ goes to Sidney Falco. He's like, you want to get any stories in my column? Why don't you go ahead and handle this thing with Steve Dallas? I don't like it. Go take care of it. So he's off to try to break up that relationship. And it's just like a lot of side characters coming in. I mean, you have like cigarette girl Rita, who works at this club. So like, you know, there's a lot of fun characters that kind of get intertwined in this tapestry of journalistic insanity.
Yeah, well, she's trying to, it's the whole thing where she's trying to, like, keeps trying to get his attention, like, because she needs help. And he's just, like, she's just, like, so dismissive of her just because he's got, you know, bigger fish to fry, essentially. But she does like him. I mean, you get the sense that, like, she, like, that whole sequence where, you know, she's, like, trying to, like, nudge him, like, hey, like, is your key still under the mat? Like, she obviously likes him, but he just, like, doesn't really, he's not focused on her at all.
No, it's all about the publicity for him, his job.
It's all about himself.
Yeah. Yes. So basically the plan is to plant a rumor that Dallas, he smokes weed, which is, you know, he's going to give him the old Mitchum in 57 that he's a weed smoking communist, you know, that the two worst things you could be at this time.
Now, not so much. Now it's the opposite.
No, that's maybe, the coolest thing you could be probably. Yeah. And so, yeah, they're going to do that. They're going to put it, you know, like in a rival column so they could just look as far away from them doing this thing as possible. And of course, you know, like pot smoking communist, you're fucking fired, dude. So everything seems to work. But then all of a sudden, JJ, you know, he's trying to make his sister happy. She's very bummed about this whole situation and can tell what's going on because she knows how powerful her brother is. And he's like, oh, no, that wasn't me. Look, I'll get him his job back. Like, oh, I'm a good brother.
Yeah, we should also mention that, like, he has to go, like, the lengths he has to go to, like, make this happen, like, basically, like, trying to blackmail people into, like, doing this for him, and, like, mm-hmm. the way he has to, like, convince the other guy who's, like, basically, like, the number two guy to Hunsaker, he has to basically just be like, hey, I'm gonna, you know, get you set up with Rita, and if you do this for me, you know, he tries to, like, really has to, like, go to all these lengths and, like, physically takes him to her and, like, tries to, like, you know, bring them together and just like
that's fucked up when that happens.
It really is.
That's a dark one. Yeah,
it's a great scene. I mean, Rita's amazing in it, especially when she like storms back to the bedroom looking for her shoe. She's like circling around and like compares herself to Tangerine.
Don't you know who that man is?
Yeah, Otis Elwell, the columnist.
Yeah,
and he's a perfect stranger to me.
So take 5 minutes, get acquainted. He's an important man. He's lonely. Don't be dumb.
What do you want all of a sudden? Lady Godiva? Where's my other shoe?
What kind of an act is this?
Don't you think I have any feelings? What am I? A bowl of fruit? A tangerine that peels in a minute?
I beg your pardon. How do you like this? I turned myself inside out to do you a favor. Now I'm the heavy. Here's your shoe. There's your coat. And there's the door.
Barbara Nichols does a great job as Rita. Yeah.
She's amazing.
Like the last parting shot like of her in that whole sequence where like it's like her face on an angle with the camera. And she meant like because he's like kind of like grilling her, like, didn't I see you like in like, you know, somewhere else? And then finally she's like, I think she says Florida, I think it's the last one or something. Mm-hmm. But it's just a really great shot.
Yeah, they always do in that sequence a lot of like close up, like harsh close ups on her, mm-hmm. Which mm-hmm. I found super interesting. And then there are always lots of like, there's this one great shot of Rita talking to the guy, and you can like see the bedroom in the background. It's just so sinister the way he's like trying to flirt with her, but you can like see everything that's going on.
It's very really? Cool. And so, yeah, like he's like calling in all these favors, like and blackmails to everybody. And also there's like this one guy, he tries to blackmail another columnist, and he's like, hey, been cheating on your wife. And he just goes to his wife and like, hey, sorry, I was cheating on you. Like totally gets ahead of it. And Tony Curtis doesn't know what the fuck to do. He's like, oh, whoops. All right. Well, good luck, you two crazy kids.
He's desperate.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And so Dallas is rehired, and JJ is like, hey, I look good in front of my sister, but this isn't good. We got to get rid of this guy, you know? And of course, during this whole scene where like, he's making a whole like, oh, look at me, I'm so powerful getting you rehired, Dallas still does not respect JJ the way he wants it. And he doesn't like that whatsoever. So he's like, hey, Falco, I'm not done with you yet. Why don't you go plant some marijuana on Dallas and we'll get him arrested. And I know some dirty cops that'll just beat the shit out of him. And that should solve our problem. That communist angle was no good. It's just weed and dirty cops.
Yeah. One thing I do really like about if you watch, Tony Curtis is always behind Hunsaker, always. Mm-hmm. So whether he's walking or sitting in pretty much every scene, he's always walking behind him or sitting behind him, kind of showing that level of like Burt Lancaster has that like air over him. And you notice it like when they're at the restaurant, you notice when they're walking down the street, when he's trying to plead with him, he's always kind of like chasing behind him. Later on, as we get to the sequence where they're in that theater, he's sitting behind him. You know, it really shows that like that kind of like hegemony he has over him. Throughout.
That's
it.
Definitely intentional.
Yeah.
There is a story about, you know, when Tony Curtis first goes to Burt Lancaster, and it's like the first time we're introduced to JJ, and he like first he phone calls before he goes over the table, and then he approaches the table. Like you said, like he pulls up a chair and like sort of sits a little bit behind JJ, and that was intentional. I think originally JJ is supposed to shift down and make room for Sidney, and Burt Lancaster supposedly blew his fuse, went crazy, and was like, JJ would never, ever, ever be boxed in at a restaurant. Like he just went crazy and was like, that would never happen. Like JJ would never make room for Sidney. And he got his way.
Well, he was a producer. I'm sure it wasn't that hard.
Yeah.
And it's my movie.
And he's also terrified.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. Well, he's in the zone. He's JJ. So he's like, oh, guess what? Susie and Steve are now engaged. Steve Dallas, of course. And so that didn't work whatsoever. People are just running towards each other. So definitely need to get him to get beat up. And as a result, he's like, I'll cover all your clients for a good long while. You can take my sister out on vacation. Like, be great. What more could you want? Mm-hmm. And he's like, all right, cool. Let's do this. He slips a couple jazz cigarettes into his pocket. Now you know why they're called that, Dad. And of course, they find the weed and they're like, all right, beat him up. And they beat him up indeed. He is hospitalized. It is, they're very good at beatings, these dirty cops, for sure. They dish it out quite well.
I do like the way it's repeated, that sequence, because it comes up later.
Oh, absolutely.
It's the same, like, MO, like, as far as, like, the way that, you know, dirty cop who is basically a dirty cop that just is in like in
Harry Kello.
Pockets.
Yeah.
Kello is amazing in how dirty he actually is. He's just like a grease ball.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
It's just radiating off of him. So that happens, all is well, and they're like, all right, let's party. Let's toast to my favorite perfume. What could that smell like, huh? Success. Who do you think releases that, Dan?
I have no idea.
What do you think that perfume commercial is like?
It's probably like Dior or something, right?
I was gonna say Dior too. Are they just like the hot perfume and commercials right now?
Probably, or Yves Saint Laurent or something.
Are they like pretty? That's the one.
I can see it being Saint Laurent.
That's the one.
Yeah.
Well done.
Good one.
I'm just surprised I know about all of this.
I'm very impressed. You did quite well.
Thank you. I'm a man of the world.
Well, we're toasting to that now. So yeah, I mean, it's like, cool, we're gonna party, but Falco has like got to go to Hunsecker's for them to talk, and Susan is there. She's not too psyched about how what everything that has transpired, especially with the man that she loves, and she's like, I'm gonna fucking jump. I'm gonna kill myself. And he stops her and, you know, is like, hey, don't do this. Like, keep your eye on the prize. Like, we're all doing good things here. We could be on vacation. Just enjoy what your brother's doing. So he closes the window and he like pulls her away from it. And then old JJ. And he's like, hey, wait a second. What is this? What are you two doing? This doesn't look like a suicide at all. And Falco's like, what the hell? What's going on here?
Doesn't help that she's in her negligee.
No, yeah. Not at all. Although, you know, it was like nighttime, sleepy time.
No, but when JJ walks in and she's like slumped over and...
Oh, yeah.
Well, she's like on the bed, right? Because at that point, like the way like that like whole thing went down, like she ended up like kind of laying on the bed and he was kind of over her. Mm-hmm. And then JJ walks in. So obviously like JJ's like, what the heck is going on here?
Yeah, and he would never imagine his baby sister trying to kill herself.
Yeah.
That's true.
He knows like Falco's like, you know, slimy dude, and he's thinking like, oh, like all along, like this is what you're moving in now, that Dallas is out of the way.
Nobody understands each other, you know, they all have just visions for other people that are not accurate to who they actually are. And you know, maybe if they just sat down and talked, you could have solved a lot of these problems. But
JJ's not the type of guy to sit down and have a heart to heart, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, it's so tough too, because like, you know, you feel pretty sympathetic for Susan up to this point. You know, she tried to break up with Steve Dallas, so like what happens to him didn't happen, but then it did. So you're like, oh man, oh, that's so sad. And then, you know, now she's just like not speaking up and being like, oh yeah, no, I was like about to kill myself. Like, this guy stopped me. Just watch him get slapped around by old Lancaster.
Yeah.
And this 1957 slap, so you could feel him.
Mm-hmm.
And so... Yeah. Falco is just fucked, basically. You know, he then is like, what are you doing? Come on. Like, remember we tried to frame your sister and scam her and all that stuff. Come on. And then she's like, hey, wait a second. What's that now about doing all that stuff to Steve Dallas? And so now the cat is out of the bag.
So he calls that's the point where he's like, oh yeah, well, I'm calling in another favor to my
greasy
police
guy.
Yeah, my friend of the police. And
you my remember, greasy policey.
Remember what happened to Dallas? Well, it's going to happen to you too.
Yeah, you like
a car is going to show up.
And so, yeah, a car does show up and he is horribly beaten as well. Susan tries to leave and JJ's like, what are you doing? And she's like, oh, by the way, wink, wink. I did try to kill myself, but, you know, this guy probably had it coming. And I'm going to go be with Dallas. So here's a happy ending for you.
I'm Peace leaving out. You.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I don't want to be anywhere near, you know, living with you anymore.
She chose life, you know, like she was two seconds ago, she was killing herself. And now she's like, why not just try something else? Leaving.
Did you notice, too, it's the first time she takes off the fur coat and she comes to him wearing a completely different coat.
Did not notice that.
Yeah.
Those are professional eyes there.
No, I think the fur coat is supposed to represent everything that JJ is. You know, the luxury,
lavish lifestyle. Yeah,
exactly. And then so when she's leaving, she's wearing like a very plain overcoat and she takes the fur off.
Well, seeing, you know, kind of seeing him really for what he is for the first time, I mean, hearing like what, like this whole plot behind her back to get rid of Dallas, you know, at that point, it like really woke her up like, wow, like, you know, I've been kind of just like curtailing to this guy my whole life, they make it seem like. So now she's like, I'm going to go out on my own and do my own thing. I also want to mention there's one scene that we kind of glossed over, but there's that whole sequence where Dallas stands up to JJ in that theater. Mm-hmm. And that sequence takes a really long time, but it's good because it shows that like he is really, like we talked about earlier, like one of the few people that like legitimately stands up to JJ. And obviously he does not take that well at all.
Yeah, everything he says is right. Like, yeah, fuck that guy.
I also like the whole sequence where Tony Curtis tries to like do that thing on the side where he like kind of cons that other, like, I guess he's like a comedian.
Comedian, yeah.
Yeah. And like he like tries to like plays that whole game where he like gets on the phone, he pretends he's like talking to JJ, like, oh yeah, I'm gonna get you on this column, blah blah blah. And like really tries to like pull one on him to try to get him as a client to try to make money out of him. So, which I thought was funny. Like, it's a funny thing. Like the fact that through all of this, he's like still wheeling and dealing like on the side, like kind of show, does really show you like who he is. And like, it stresses me out. Like this movie stresses me out. Just cause like the personalities of these people, like, it's, yeah.
It's a scummy movie for sure.
Yeah.
These are the worst of the worst.
Yeah, I could take absolutely a lot of scummy people, but like, I think these types of personalities are like some of my least favorite traits and personalities of people. I think that's what's tougher for me to.
Yeah. Cause I mean, it's not even like, I mean, there's violence, of course, that's dished out, but it's more just like manipulation and mental evil, which is always the scariest kind.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Especially when
I also want to shout out Sam Levine.
Hey!
Who's amazing in this movie as Steve's manager. Mm-hmm. He's so good in this. I just wish he had more time.
There's a lot of like just characters you don't get enough of who really shine the time that you do get them, for sure. Yeah, I don't know. It's tough. It's a jam-packed movie.
Yeah.
Dan, do you want to sum this up with some score?
Uh-oh.
I love it. I guess I want to preface it with...
Here we go.
I don't know if this movie.
Yes, yes.
I will credit it as, is it a great movie? Yes, it is a great movie. I'm not saying that's not a good movie. It's just not a movie I enjoy. I think the types of personalities are like just people I can't stand. And sometimes there are movies where like I don't like anybody, but I can still enjoy the movie for what it is. But I think this, like, there's just something about it I don't like. Like, are there things I like about it? Yeah. I mean, the cinematography obviously is like the best thing about it. Like, in my opinion, like, I think the cinematography is amazing.
Phenomenal.
Yeah. And the score, like everything about it. I mean, I love this time period, mid late 50s film noir. Like, I have such a love for it. And I love Tony Curtis and Burt Lancaster. So like on paper, like I want to love this movie, but it's just not one that like I enjoy watching. Like, it's not one that I'm just like, oh, I'm really excited to go watch this again. But it's fine. Like, it's a great movie. It's just not one I enjoy watching.
What's the number score for that?
I'm going to say, because it's a good movie, I'm going to say like 7.2. Okay. But again, like my rewatch like value for me is not as much there as maybe other movies.
Text me your real score when we're done with the show.
you think I'm holding back? I'm not holding back.
I think you're putting a couple extra points on for our guest.
No.
I'm not going to be. I mean, I didn't make the movie. You can say whatever you
didn't
want.
You, though?
No.
Let's reveal it now. Film Noir Confidential's grandfather was involved with this production.
I wish.
No, I'm being straightforward. Like, no, like I said, it is a good movie. I just don't like it. Like, I don't enjoy watching it.
Because it stresses you out? Like, does it pacing and energy give you anxiety?
I don't like either the main character's energy. Like they're like the exact opposite type of people for me. And I don't like those type of personalities. So I think I have a tough time like just like watching it. Like, I think I just have a tough time watching those people like hustling other people. And like the air that JJ has over everybody annoys me. Like his character just sucks so much.
It's too real to life, you know?
Right. I think that's what it is. Like it's so well done. And I give it that credit. But it's just not, again, not something I watch that I'm like, oh, wow, this is great. Like, I don't enjoy watching it.
Yeah.
It's a very conflicting movie for me, is what I'm saying.
I agree with everything you're saying, Dan. It is like a technically great movie. I really am a fan of everything, but like probably the director, like the direction I find a little lacking. But I mean, I think it's an awesome script. Everyone really kills it with their performances. And of course, as I was saying, the cinematography is the reason to watch this thing. But I agree, the rewatch value, it's like a tough film to redo. And it really is like a film that needs to be taken as like a whole piece, as opposed to just like, oh man, like you got to stay for this one scene, you know? Like,
right.
There's not any particular scene that I would say is like the scene. It's just, you got to stay and watch the whole thing.
It's subtext too. I mean, like as we kind of talked about, I mean, there are a lot of layers to it. And for that, like I said, that's what I give it credit for. It's like, it's a really good movie. It's just, yeah.
Personal feelings.
Personal taste, and whatnot.
Yeah. So I'd give this 6.9 out of 10 smells.
Ooh, that's okay.
What would you give? What would you give this 10 out of 10 film for yourself?
10 out
yeah,
of 10.
Yeah, exactly. It's like for me, like a 9.5.
Well, what?
It's very high.
What are we missing? How come we're unable to rewatch this and you are?
I mean, it's interesting because you're saying that the characters are too true to life, but isn't that a testament to how great the movie is? Like, you're saying it hit too close to home. But then isn't that a great representation?
I mean, sort of. It's just like, you know, if you have something traumatic in your life, like these horrible people, you know, these are like your bosses in life and stuff like that. Now you're watching them take on other people that maybe you could relate to. Like, oh, man, I was scammed like that or something. I don't know.
Yeah, but I think also at the
I personally end... see myself as a J.J. Hunsaker. So, I'm fine with it. You know, I get it.
It's sort of like... has a nice ending though to, you know what I mean? Like if you don't root for the characters, Sydney gets beaten at the end. JJ's left completely alone. Susan goes off to find Steve. The only person that doesn't get punished is the cop really.
Yeah.
You know, who gets away with being
also true to life.
Like, beating. Yeah. Which is really sadly still applicable. But I think that also like ties it up nicely in a little bow for me that like a lot of the people kind of get what they deserve in the end.
Well, does Steve Dallas deserve Susan Hunsaker? I mean, because of her, he got this beating that put him in a hospital. Like, isn't
no,
it better?
Because of JJ.
Well, sure, but I mean, is JJ gone? You know, like all he did was, we don't know that. We just hope that that's the case, that this was enough to, for him to be like, boy, I'll leave my sister alone now instead of just
no more meddling.
Yeah, instead of being like, why is Steve Dallas still alive? Like, pull the fucking plug. Hey, you cops never got any consequences. Let's keep up the good work.
I have a weird question. Do you guys find JJ's level of love for his sister a little strange?
Oh, 100%. Yeah.
I'm wondering if there's like some context of like, is he in love with his sister? Like, I don't quite know. Cause it's like, there's that one scene where he's like watching her sleep and like, you know, there's just a lot of, I can't tell.
So actually, I have some possible reasoning for that. And I think that's a good segue to our facts for the movie, because I think there was a little bit of an explanation for that. So let's start with the original budget for the movie was $600,000, but eventually ballooned to $2.6 million. And that's in 1957. So
wow,
a lot of money. Burt Lancaster and his producing partners initially considered Orson Welles for the role of J.J. Hunsaker. But after the success of Trapeze in 1956, Lancaster decided to play the role himself and give Tony Curtis the role of Sidney Falco. So that would be interesting.
Welles and Lancaster would have been awesome, actually.
Yeah. What about Welles and Curtis, though?
It would have been Welles and Curtis, no?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And so Lancaster would have just produced then?
Yes.
Okay. Yes. Yeah. I mean, either way, I just want to see Welles as Hunsaker. I think that would have been phenomenal.
But Tony Curtis's studio didn't want him to do this film either.
Right.
So that was also, yeah.
That would have been another issue.
Yeah.
So getting to what you were mentioning earlier, the character of J.J. Hunsaker is based on the famed New York columnist Walter Winchell. And even the director wanted to cast Hume Cronyn in the role of J.J., due to his physical resemblance to Walter Winchell.
Oh, wow.
And if you actually do like a deep dive on Walter Winchell, like on Wikipedia and stuff like that, like he's based on him because of not only that he's a big columnist and radio, but he also had that type of relationship with his sister, who's like very super protective of his sister.
Not so his sister, his daughter, Walda. He tried to maneuver the breakup of her and someone and a producer, William Kahn.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, so like that's I think where a lot of that comes from. So might actually have to look at Walter Winchell's like maybe.
Yes, absolutely. And the writer Ernest Lemon, he was like a press agent himself. So like a lot of this stuff came from, you know, his experience back then. So yeah, very interesting. You know, kind of like a Citizen Kane type deal.
Yeah,
just base him on these real asshole tycoons.
Something I noticed. At the end of this watching, and it comes up here in the notes as well, which I didn't notice the other times I've seen it, is that Hunsaker's apartment building is actually the front of it when he walks out is the Brill Building. Which like I didn't catch other times I watched it. I was like, oh, it's the Brill Building. Like, that's really cool. You know, obviously with like the Tin Pan Alley and the whole like Brill sound, you know, building sound of the, I guess it's like the 50s and 60s. Yeah.
Yeah. I love the Brill Building.
Yeah. Burt Bacharach and like a bunch of others. Shooting, they actually did shoot on location in New York, as you could see. And it actually like really stressed out the director, and I'm sure it would me too. A lot of the exteriors were shot in the busiest, noisiest areas with lots of crowds of young Tony Curtis fans that were always trying to like rush him, you know, because they wanted to be around him. Even McKendrick remembered, we started shooting in Times Square at rush hour, and we had high powered actors and a camera crane and police help and all the rest of it, but we didn't have any script. We knew where we were going vaguely, but that's all. So wow. Yeah, apparently there's a lot of stress, as you could probably imagine.
I mean, that makes its way into the film.
Yeah.
Everyone's going method, that's all.
Yeah, right. According to TCM's Eddie Muller, Walter Winchell was delighted that the film bombed at the box office, and at a preview showing of the picture, an audience member commented, quote, "Don't change a thing, just burn all the prints."
Yikes.
Yeah, it definitely was not received very well when it came out. A preview screening of Sweet Smell of Success was poorly received, as I mentioned, as Tony Curtis fans were expecting him to play one of the more typical nice guy roles. Instead, were presented with Sidney Falco. McKendrick remembered seeing audience members, quote, curling up, crossing their arms and legs, recoiling from the screen in disgust. Burt Lancaster's Lancaster's fans were not thrilled with their idol either, quote, finding the film too static and talky. Those darn talky films.
Yeah.
Burt Lancaster actually blamed Ernest Lehman, the writer of the novel or the novella, for his withdrawal due to illness from the film's box office failure. At the after party from the premiere, Lancaster said, quote, "You didn't have to leave. You could have made this a much better picture. I ought to beat you up."
Well, because he was up for directing it. That just right. For more context for that. Yeah, he was actually exactly. Originally going to direct it. And then they're like, oh, wait, this guy never directed anything. Get rid of them. And yeah, now all of a sudden they're like, why'd you go? It's like, fuck you, Burt Lancaster.
I also like the idea that he's like saying, I ought to beat you up.
Yeah.
And then Lehman's response was, go ahead, I need the money.
Hell yeah.
So I thought I'd leave on that one. I think that's pretty good.
A couple things to add. So yeah, the book or novella, so they changed some things. There was a rape in it.
Mm-hmm.
That they had changed, of course. There was some elements of incest and I think a lot more marijuana. So that was something. There was a musical, Dan, I'm surprised you didn't bring up.
I didn't see that.
Yeah, with John Lithgow in it. It was from like 2002. It reportedly lost its entire $10 million investment.
who would imagine that?
It was,
yeah, I don't see this being a great musical.
It received largely negative reviews and was a commercial flop. One critic lamented that it was, quote, "a real heartbreaker, one of those fabulous sounding new musicals with an impeccable pedigree which never quite comes together and ultimately only disappoints."
The only way I think it would have been good is if John Lithgow played both main characters.
Hell
like
yeah.
Like that would have been fun. Like yeah. if he had to go like back and forth between JJ and Falco, that I probably would have watched.
But he's one of my favorite singers, so I would have loved to hear some cast recordings from that one.
Yeah, when I think of Broadway and musicals, I definitely think of him. Yeah.
Give me Lithgow, baby. And one last shout out for our friend James Wong Howe. He earned the nickname Low Key Howe because of his penchant for for dramatic lighting and deep shadows, a technique that came to be associated with film noir. So he's quite revolutionary in our favorite genre. That's all. That's all I got.
Yeah,
film noir confidential. Did we mess up anything? Did we leave anything out?
No, I was going to say there's a couple more that I can think of really quickly. Like,
bring them in.
So for the filming, they asked Burt Lancaster to wear his actual glasses so he could look more intimidating. And they, I think McKendrick put a thin layer of Vaseline on the lenses. So Burt Lancaster would always have like this blank stare on his face. And then James shot from a low angle using a wide angle lens. So the glasses would like cast a shadow on Lancaster's face. which I always found super interesting. And also, before they hired the Chico Hamilton, they investigated his group for like a couple of months beforehand to see if they did any drugs, because they didn't want anyone involved with the film. Like, they didn't want to hire someone and then somebody from the press finding out that like they did marijuana later on or something like that. So they like secretly had them followed for months until they had like a clean bill of health, and then they hired them to be in the film.
Oh.
Yeah, I think it was James Wong Howe that actually did the Vaseline thing. I think
Really? Even
better. Yeah. I would give him more credit anyway. But yeah, I think it was him that did that.
You mean a director trying to take credit for everything? No, that never
I don't like this director. I don't. I think he's.
Well, you know, McKendrick was terrified he was going to be fired any minute, any day. So, you know.
Should have fired him.
I feel like you can sense that through the movie.
The lesson really is, don't work for this production company, no matter how much you love Burt Lancaster.
Well, there's a lot of people who came out after the movie, like the Elmer Bernstein and Chico Hamilton. Like, a lot of people afterwards came out and said that like Burt is just terrifying.
Yeah,
and was just like a scary, scary guy.
Yeah, he's threatening to beat people up. It's not good.
Yeah. Well, McKendrick only did like a handful of movies anyway, and like the only one that like I knew is his. I think it was his last movie. He did a movie in 1967 called "Don't Make Waves," which is like a beach movie with Tony Curtis.
Yeah,
and I know it because I think
it's got that song where, like, "Don't Make Waves." Like,
yeah, yeah, and you know who does that song?
Who?
It's the Birds.
Oh, shit. Wow.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I've only seen the trailer, but it seems cool.
Yeah, they actually did, like, let me see. I think they even made it for the movie. I mean, I guess that makes sense, but, like, sure. I'm pretty sure. Yeah, yeah, they did. Yeah. Big Birds fan.
I'm a Big Bird fan.
Are you?
I got that.
Thank you. Anything else to comment on this twisted tale of evil and newspapers?
Just a good movie. Yeah,
thank you for having me on this episode, even though you guys don't like the movie.
We do like the movie, we just don't
enjoy
the movie. Yeah. We can recognize it's a great movie. Yeah. But we're glad you brought it to us, and we were gonna get here anyways.
Okay, well, maybe next time I can come for a movie that you actually enjoy.
Well, that's always the test, isn't it? You never know with the lads.
It's all about suspense, you know? You never know.
Exactly. Go watch.
Well, I thought one of you maybe didn't like it. I didn't realize both of you didn't like it. So that was a nice, that was a surprise for sure.
Well, I will offer that I did send Joey the list as we're making up for the next season, and I did include this in the list, I believe.
That is true, yes.
So, yeah, I will say that I did put it in there despite, my mixed feelings about it, so...
We want to talk about it. It looks so good.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a highly talented.
Yeah, it's going to be some beautiful art for this episode. Absolutely.
And I will say, I do actually really do enjoy the artwork on the Criterion. I will say that.
Is that a Sean Phillips, I believe?
Probably. Very
I will say the commentary too on the Criterion version is excellent. I think it's one of my favorite commentaries I've listened to.
Who does it?
I don't know.
Oh,
film scholar James Naremore.
Okay.
Thank you. I'm like reading the bag.
Yeah. There's also a James Wong Howe documentary from 1973, which I wanted to watch, but I didn't get a chance to because I would like to watch that.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah. And for people listening, I think if you search Vimeo, you can actually find it up there.
Oh,
if it's the same documentary I'm thinking of, it's either from the 70s or 80s.
Very cool.
It might be on Criterion Channel, too. I know the movie wasn't at this moment, but sometimes they still have the features up there. Well, thank you, FilmNoirConfidential.com.
Thank you for having me.
Screen name, Instagram, other stuff. The best in the business. Yes. We keep watching your meteor rise. We love seeing it. So thank you so much for coming. Announcement. The show is going to be going on a little bit of a hiatus for just a couple months, but we'll be back April 6th. We'll be coming back strong. We might do some bonus episodes or something in between. We'll try to get that pint glass and mug released, but just got to get some stuff done, recharge some batteries, and the lads will be back.
Party horns.
Yes, thank you. Now we know what they're called.
Got to get our Party City account together, and we'll get personalized ones and
originally we weren't even going to be back till like August, but now that we know what they're called, that's like 3 months of research done right there.
Right. Well, that's what I'm going to be doing during those 3 months, is that I'm going to be researching how to get personalized party horns.
All right. Yeah. That sounds great. But hopefully we'll also be doing cool stuff. Maybe Dan will make another album or something.
You never know.
That's my challenge to you.
Probably not.
Okay.
I will say this. I'll probably be doing some, I'll make some posts here and there.
The social stuff will still be there. But we're just kind of figuring out the next year and kind of getting ahead on some episodes. Like, we'll still be recording and stuff, but just trying to be a well-oiled show. So we'll see you April 6th, but out of the podcast, Instagram, out of the cast, Twitter, the real out of the podcast at gmail.com. Rate, review, subscribe, tell us you miss us and you want us to come back sooner.
Yeah, maybe if more people chime in saying they're missing our content.
It's a Tinkerbell situation, you just gotta believe.
Love that.
Thank you.
I was not expecting that. So I had no comment for that.
Of course, we wanted to have our friend Film Noir Confidential with us before we took a little breather. So thank you for killing it, as always.
Thank you for having me. It's so fun coming on whenever you guys want me. I'm here.
We're back in April, so we'll see you then.
Okay.
You got plenty of time to recharge as well. But I love you guys, and we love the Noiros, and we'll keep in touch. We'll be back soon. It's not like the show's ending or something. We're just taking a break. Come on now. It's easy there.
It's too late for tears, guys. Come on.
Hey, there you go. And speaking of too late for tears, here's the crime, but really here's to that sweet smell, huh?
Here's the crime.
Ridding. Film Noir Confidential didn't want to here's the crime with us.
Yeah, nice work. Real true professional.
I have water. You're not supposed to cheers with water.
I have nothing. I have nothing near me. I never have drink. I make it like basically a rule. I never drink when I'm on the podcast.
He's so thirsty.
I'm very thirsty right now, guys.
You're literally parched.